You're listening to Idaho Matters. I'm Gemma Gaudette. What do Ernest Hemingway, Ezra Pound, F. Scott Fitzgerald, and E.E. Cummings all have in common? Well, if you said they were all writers and they lived in Paris during the 1920s, you'd be right. And the person who brought them together was Sylvia Beach, an American woman who owned the bookstore Shakespeare & Company. Author Carrie Mayer is joining us today to talk about her latest novel. It's called The Paris Bookseller, and it chronicles that time through Sylvia's eyes. Welcome to the program, Carrie.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here today.
Okay, let's start with the basics for maybe folks who don't know a lot about these folks. Who was Sylvia Beach?
So as you said, Sylvia Beach is the American woman who opened the original Shakespeare & Company bookstore in Paris in 1919. And it quickly became the home of those lost generation writers, you know, those very famous writers from the 1920s that we all know, F. Scott Fitzgerald, Ernest Hemingway, Gertrude Stein, Ezra Pound. You know, they all came to Shakespeare & Company, and they hung out at Shakespeare & Company. And in some cases, they even used Shakespeare & Company as their permanent mailing address in Paris. And as if that wasn't enough, she also published the very first edition of James Joyce's novel Ulysses in 1922. So we're coming up on the centennial of it. After it had been become a banned book in an obscenity trial in New York in 1921.
So let's go back a little bit because, you know, Sylvia had spent time in Paris, like in her youth. So she comes back and she buys this bookstore. And as you mentioned, it really becomes this haven for these expat writers, but also creatives. I mean, like Picasso. And, you know, she really wanted this as kind of a haven, frankly, for these creative types.
Yeah, she did. And, you know, her example in this was a French language bookstore and lending library that was on the Rue de l'Odéon. It was called La Maison des Amis de Livres, the House of the Friends of Books. And please excuse my French pronunciation. But it was owned by a French woman named Adrienne Monnier, who had opened her store in 1915 in the thick of the First World War. She was a very young woman when she opened it in her 20s. And she was one of the very first female bookstore owners in all of France. And her store, La Maison, really became very quickly a hub of French intellectual bohemian life. She hosted readings, André Gide, Jean Cocteau, like so many famous French intellectuals came to her store. And what Sylvia kind of stumbled into the store one day on a research mission in 1917, and she fell in love with the store and the kind of the life that the store hosted. And what she also discovered was that these French writers were hungry to read books in English, which were hard to come by in Paris at this time. And so when she opened Shakespeare & Company as an English bookstore, English language bookstore and lending library, she really initially believed that she was filling this need in the French intellectual community. And her very first customers and patrons really were those French writers and intellectuals.
Also, I think in the book, you do such a good job of really giving the reader a sense of what Paris was like in the 1920s. How important was it to you to make sure, you know, we could feel that as we were reading?
Well, thank you. And very important. Paris is in the title, and I really wanted Paris as a place to be like a character in the novel because, you know, it was so important as a place and as an inspiration to my characters. You know, I think that this moment really couldn't have happened anywhere else at any other time. It was a lightning in a bottle kind of moment. And so it was important to me to represent Paris as a place. I actually got to go to Paris in the early stages of my research before the world shut down. So I'm so grateful that I was able to do that. And I stayed in this neighborhood where the bookstores were and where these writers largely lived when they were living in Paris. And I got to soak it up and really, I just tried to get it down as best I could.
And I have to say, I mean, I have an incredibly special spot in my heart for Paris. And you know, what's interesting to me as well, especially for our listeners here in Boise, is that, you know, as we mentioned, I mean, Sylvia Beach brought these expat writers together, people like Ernest Hemingway, Ezra Pound, you know, and as people know, I mean, we, you know, here in Idaho, we claim Hemingway as our own, so do other places. But then Ezra Pound was born in Sun Valley. And so it's interesting to me, you know, there's this connection still to the West and to America, but all of these writers and creatives landed in Paris basically because at the time it was sometimes cheaper to actually live in Paris than it was to stay here. And some people may not recognize that.
Yes, yes. You know, and speaking of the American West, Gertrude Stein is from California, as am I.
So
it is interesting. I had forgotten that actually about Ezra Pound. And so they did land in Paris. And so it was less expensive. And actually, you know, part of Shakespeare and Company's story is that in its very first incarnation, Sylvia actually originally conceived of opening a French language bookstore in New York, but as is still true today, it was too expensive. The rents were too high.
Wow.
She couldn't afford to open a store in New York. So she very quickly modified her idea to be a French language bookstore. I mean, I'm sorry, an English language bookstore in Paris. And thank goodness, because that project has changed the world that we're living, you know, made the world we're living today possible. And you're right. So the world is sort of coming out of the so-called Great World War, the First World War, which really, you know, decimated everything. It decimated families, a whole generation, you know, buildings, land, and really the whole social structure in Europe and in America. Like things that people thought were safe were not safe anymore. And the world really needed to be remade from the ashes. And so this literary movement that Sylvia hosted in her store, which we now call modernism, was in fact remaking meaning and remaking the world from the rubble of that war.
And I think it's important for people to understand that, I mean, this particular time in history had such significance to literature, not just then, but now. And
yes,
I think you kind of weave that into the book.
I try. I mean, you know, we are still living in the literary world that Ulysses made. and Hemingway and Ezra Pound and Gertrude Stein, you know, they remade literature in the 20th century, and we are still living in that world today. You know, writers who are able to write with absolute just bald face, nitty-gritty honesty about their bodies and about the working inner workings of their minds really have Ulysses to thank, and Sylvia Beach for being visionary enough to publish it when the big name publishers withdrew their offers after the obscenity trial, because as she correctly saw, it wasn't obscene, it was art.
So talk about this, because I think, you know, I mean, as you mentioned, we're coming up on the 100th anniversary of Ulysses. So some people may not know the backstory of it, but, you know, Sylvia Beach, I mean, here she is, this fairly young American woman in Paris with this bookstore, and decides to frankly take a huge leap of faith by publishing this book.
Yeah, you know, I think absolutely. One thing I want to share about this, and this isn't to lessen her achievement at all, it's to augment it, is that, you know, she was sort of picking up the baton of two other American women who were publishing Ulysses in the United States. So the trial of 1921, it was not James Joyce or the book itself that was being tried. It was actually Margaret Anderson and Jane Heap, who were the editors and publishers of this avant-garde literary journal called The Little Review. They were being tried for publishing, serializing chapters of this so-called obscene book. And so when the verdict was handed down, it was these two American women publishers who were convicted of publishing obscenity. And that resulted in the American publishers who were men withdrawing their offers to publish it. And so Sylvia, I think, was she absolutely believed in the book and in Joyce as a writer and his genius and all of that. But I think she was also inspired by the trailblazing vision of these other two American women publishers that she felt, well, okay, I can pick up this baton. I can take this book to the finishing line.
So I have to ask, because I'm sure you get this all of the time. And as I was reading the book, I asked myself these questions. Okay, what's true? What had some creative license? And I did read your author's note at the end, but a lot of what you write, I mean, there, I do want people to understand that, yes, you took some creative license, but there is a lot of fact and true history in this book.
Right. Yes. You know, so this is a question, you know, especially writers of what's called biographical fiction, like this book that's based on real lives that were lived on planet Earth. Uh-huh. We get asked this all the time, you know, how much is fiction, how much is imagined? You know, I think the sort of very general, we could talk for hours about this, but the very general and true answer is that the major events, you know, like, you know, the trial I just described and the two women who stood trial for it and the dates and all of those things are absolutely true. And I think those of us who do write biographical fiction feel this real need to be true to our subjects, to represent them as accurately as possible. And also, we have to embrace the fact that the novel is fiction and an interpretation of those lives. You know, my James Joyce and Sylvia Beach and Adrienne Monnier is not going to be the same as another writer's. And so there's a tension there, right? Like between mm-hmm. being true to what actually happened and these people's real lived experience and the fact that it's also a work of fiction and interpretation.
Well, I have to say it is I found it to be a lovely book. And as I said, I mean, you know, it's Paris, so can't get much better than that. Right.
Paris in the '20s, it really doesn't get that much better than that. And Adrienne is a major gourmet. And so I got to talk about the food too.
Yes, I know. I mean, honestly, it's truly kind of a love letter, I think, to Paris and to kind of book owners, it seems like.
Yes. Well, they are really, I mean, fighting the good fight out there right now. And, you know, I was so inspired by the way in which independent bookstores changed with the pandemic when it became necessary. They mm-hmm. just put everything online. They brought writers in on Zoom. And, you know, they are really still, like Sylvia Beach, putting the right sentences into the right hands.
Well, thank you for coming on and talking with us about this. And of course, for writing the book. Really appreciate the conversation.
Thank you again for having me. It was a pleasure talking to you.
Absolutely. We've been speaking with author Carrie Mayer about her new book, The Paris Bookseller. It is available right now. I want to thank all of you as well for joining us. Our producers are Frankie Barnhill and Samantha Wright. I'm Gemma Gaudette. We'll see you back here tomorrow.